I just click a couple more things. Fadi, can you hear us? And can you text me the result or vice versa? Oh, and Tia is on here. Excellent. Hi, Tia. Oh, Fadi can hear us. That's great. And if anyone on the call can't hear at any point, feel free to just like shoot an email or raise your hand or something, but we'll read a public comment at the end. Where's she? And yeah, where are you? Yeah. Come around to the side entrance on a Monument Ave. Oh, I see. She'll be here in a second. I see this. Cool. Let me hit record. This is being recorded. Jen, you hit record already? All right, we are starting the hearing meeting. We are recording. FYI.
Project manager.
Project manager who's managing the process, and Nick Armada, who is going to be giving us presentation of a summary. So we have some goals for tonight. I
We don't have the chat function on. Fadi is logged on and he is a co-host, so he can unmute and participate as needed. And with any attendees, we can request that they can unmute so then they can speak.
How about if they ever let me know that they want to
participate? Yeah. I think he's about to. Fadi, can you unmute yourself and
yes. Can you hear me?
Okay. Great. So Fadi, you want to comment? You just want to use the raise your hand function and cool. Jen will alert us that you have raised your hand and we can recognize cool. you, okay?
Thank you so much.
We have some goals for tonight. I'm happy to go through the goals for us. We're going to work through quite a bit of things, quite a few items, and then we will take public comments at the end. So I'm going to put that in on the gamma get started, and that is what we want to.
Yes, and so first, just as a matter of business, we circulated the minutes from the last meeting earlier today, and if we can postpone a vote, approve them if we like, or you can vote if you feel so inclined to make a motion to approve or amend or any sort of edits that might need to happen. Happy for someone to put out a motion, and we can also just agree to do this at the next meeting if we need more time to review them. Motion to approve from Julie. Second from anyone? Second from Crystal. Thank you. So we'll do that at all of our meetings for the minutes. And if there's typos or you didn't say something you think. Yeah, if there's anything, people just let us know ahead of time to edit it, reflect that in the minutes. So since there's nothing for right now, we can just keep on voting to approve. So all of the study committee members can just say yes or no if they approve. Julie? Yes. Crystal? Linda? We were just voting. Oh, sorry. Okay. Great. Nancy? Okay, great. Linda, thanks. Ian? Me? Cynthia?
Steve.
Okay. Crystal? Nancy?
Good thing I didn't get you three.
Beautiful. Appreciate the sensible. So, just moving on to cover up some of our loose ends from our last meeting. We just want to take a moment to talk about public feedback. If anyone has heard anything since the last meeting, we are working on responding to our requests of getting the word out there more. So thanks to Nick, who's going to explain the map, but also lead in coordinating our outreach efforts. We have created a great flyer that Nancy heroically picked up and helped to distribute. And I think you all saw it, so I emailed it to you. You guys can have a flyer that we need for the meetings, and they're very evergreen so that we can just have them and it'll redirect you to the website and the meeting agenda. So we have the flyers. We are routinely letting people know about hearings on our listserv. Like I mentioned in the last meeting, we did only have 4 people signed up last time, but now we have 15. The system works. We have been working with Sean Green also just to make sure that he has part in his neighborhood liaison newsletter to inform people about these meetings that are happening and where they can sign up to stay in for. I know he did it at least once. If you are seeing other emails from him and don't have this, feel free to let me know or to let him know and say, where's the Monument Square info? But definitely, we have been working on feedback and just making sure if you guys have been hearing anything since last time or anything.
Would you end up dropping off some of the flyers? Just like where we're like library and stuff.
Library, a couple of businesses.
Coffee shops, library businesses. Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate that.
And I haven't gotten to everything I've
been doing. It's too hot.
Yeah.
I can do a couple at a time, and then like I have to find it.
And then it's not specific.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, like, you know, great example of scheduling this meeting, had to grapple with, do we have enough a quorum for that specific day, and trying to find something that works for everybody and like the majority of people as well. So great. And so I'm glad that you feel like the flyer, like some of the stuff we've been able to hand over to the committee has been useful. Happy to heed any other suggestions. Do you guys have any ideas or gaps? Keep letting us know. I'm really appreciating the feedback. The Patriot.
I mean, they'll print the flyer real fast. They'll also, they have like weekly happenings, and they're asking for the games to be there.
If anyone, I mean, I know how to find this sort of thing myself, but if anyone has a connection to Patriot Bridge, feel free to.
Okay,
just yeah. Feel free to. Were you raising your hand? Yes, it is in the Charlestown MA neighborhood group. I made that group on Facebook in 2020. I'm routinely posting there. So, okay, great. Anyone else here for me? Ian, welcome to your first meeting. I'm sure it'll be a lot to take in. Okay, should we move on from this part? Jen?
Yes.
Jeff Gagneau. Thank you, Jeff Gagneau. All right, so we'll just move on from this. I'm sure we'll come back up. So I'll pass it over to Lee now, and just to the next few slides will be for him. This, as a reminder, is what the proposed boundary for Monument Square as it currently is stands. And now, Nick.
So hi everybody, as you already know, my name is Nick Armada. I'm the senior planner with the Boston Landmarks Commission, and we were asked to do somewhat of an analysis about possibly expanding the boundaries for the potential Monument Square of an art district. So let's talk about that, and before I show you some of the graphics that we created, I just want to let you know this is a very fluid process. Nothing is official just yet. This is all based on here are several proposals in terms of the boundaries, other than what is currently in the study. You can see the kind of red outline here is kind of a visual survey that we based on some of the research that we pulled from the state register. And then the light blue is the current proposed Breedsville National Register District. So that is currently in the works. There was some feedback from the state and federal agencies.
That is what we're showing you here. So a nomination was started and submitted to the Massachusetts Historical Commission. They received feedback, but it hasn't progressed. But they did some research that provided them with a library. So we want to set that up as a mandate for the
commission. Questions? Just wait for your answer.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, we'll set that up, by the way, if you want.
But your office came up with.
This is our initial research, okay. Yes.
And then the red wouldn't include the green, and the green you're highlighting. The answer was all of the red plus the green.
Correct, yes, yeah. So the red is the smaller.
No. This is the cumulative of what's being proposed. The original boundary is not being shown right here in this map.
Okay.
So what we're talking about today, though, the proposal is
both in red and red together. Yeah, as options. So the red and the blue are two options. And again, there's nothing solid about any of these boundaries. This is just our initial research. And since we're talking about that, let's kind of dive into some of the methodology, right? So, yeah. No.
No, that was just what she was coming here with
the national level.
Thank you.
Yeah. 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 So, what did we use for our methodology here? So, we weren't trying to reinvent the wheel in terms of the research that has already been done with the study report. So, we tried to correlate the proposed boundaries around that similar narrative, right? That narrative is. We tried to locate structures with a common historic narrative, meaning similar architectural styles, construction dates, which in the study report indicates that most of the construction on Monument Square took place around the time the monument is under construction and then finished between 1839 and 1912. And then what we noticed when we were doing the research is that there were development blocks that were taking place throughout the neighborhood. So that's what you see on this map here with all the different color-coded blocks. These were all developed by the same person. Worth noting that we did not list the development of people for Monument Square, which is already indicated in the report, but you can see that there's these common groupings in time periods that all coincide within this time period. We are still working on doing additional research. The Historic Society has some data to provide to us, but we wanted to provide you with our preliminary findings. Yes. Yeah.
From Atlas Scope, you played the game.
Thank you. Yes. Woo!
Yeah, so actually, let's get through. I'm going to have Nick get through this slide, and then why don't we all just like take a walk around so we can get a little more.
Yeah, I apologize for the map detail. It's a little bit hard to see when you can see closer up. And we can distribute this map to everybody later so that everyone can see the actual details. But essentially, we have Bunker Hill Avenue here. We have Main Street here. We have the approach to the Tobin here. And I believe this is Green Street right over here. So essentially what we did with our research here is we looked for these patterns. And then we did a kind of a visual survey of the structures in the surrounding area with the greatest historic architectural integrity. That doesn't mean the properties outside these proposed boundaries can't be included. These are the ones with the best and most intact architectural details within the red boundary. Thanks, Jay. Yeah. We also took some of the community feedback that we've heard both in these meetings, at community events such as the Mayor's Coffee Hour, as well as online feedback. And then again, we used a lot of the data that we have from the state database, which is not comprehensive, mind you. And we do have, again, we have a lot more research to do. But when we did that and we kind of combined them all together, we got these boundaries here. And that is basically what was in line with the Breeds Hill proposed boundary. But you can see there are several sections that were included, such as Monument Street, Pleasant Street, this development down here, and then some small holes over on the side here, the Tobin Approach Road. So that's basically what we have for now, and we have more research to do. We want to hear more from both you as well as members of the public in terms of what should be included. But we did want to provide a broad understanding of what we're thinking in terms of limitations of those proposed boundaries. One thing that we were not able to justify in our research was crossing Main Street over into the Town Hill area. In terms of the historic narrative, our research now did not place that connection. So that's kind of where we are right now. And I'll stop right there. Any questions for me before I hand back? Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to follow this. So the orange line, the orange boundary line, what study is that? That's the nice.
This is the study that we did.
That you did.
Yes.
And what's the blue?
The blue is the Breeds Hill National Register proposed boundary, which is not currently activated, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
Not currently activated, but they, you know, they were looking at the same area, a little bit more than what our research found.
Okay. So you're not seeing the same spectrum integrity in the blue spaces?
The blue space is just a general serve. It doesn't take into consideration the architectural integrity that exists today. It was also done how long ago? Approximately? Quite a few years ago. So something that's
so you haven't really examined what's in the blue space.
We did examine some of the blue spaces, and we have found that the initial presentation was that a lot of those structures didn't have as much architectural integrity as inside the boundary. They still do have the historic architectural integrity, but not as much as the integrity within the orange boundary.
2009
was when that survey was done. Yes.
I have another question here. I'm curious what would it look like if there was like revenue building that was after 1912, or maybe a later date or something like that. Like, did you do something like that?
Yeah, we have that map. We just didn't put it in this presentation. I'm sorry, that's a really great idea. Yeah.
I feel like that's one of the
Yeah. So we actually, what we did was we took the assessor's database, which is somewhat correct, a general idea, and it showed we grouped all of the time periods in which these buildings were constructed for the entire Charlestown neighborhood. Yes. Yep. We do have that map. Yeah.
I will say, obviously, there have been structures built in 1912 in the district. When we draw boundaries, we don't say that they're not contributing, or if they're excluded, it will still be part of that. Also, buildings that have maybe lost a little bit of integrity but still retain their form, fenestration, patterns, you would want to include that. Like, what's the one that we're talking about right now? How do you lost the integrity?
Limitations to the data that was initially available to us. So the state register does not have all the histories. This is where we think we can partner with the Charlestown Society, Preservation Society, thank you. And we can get more data because they've done their own research in terms of who built the building, its architectural style, as well as when it was actually built. And we can combine all of that data to make it more comprehensive, to make a better, more informed decision. That's going to be a tough sell because that's quite a distance away. And Baldwin is also a pending ACD, Architectural Conservation District, in itself. Gabby, is there, do we have that slide in there?
What?
The pending districts?
No. Somebody hid that slide.
Okay. That's okay. Sure. And then also, don't forget, outside of landmark districts, we also have the ability to landmark individual items or properties in the neighborhood, such, for instance, the Charlestown Savings Bank is an individual landmark. So the Hollow Field House and the Rope Walk, there's one more, and I always forget the name. But we do have the ability to individually landmark some of these properties that are not in this vicinity, but still no less significant.
So the bottom right there, that part of the camp, basically.
Say that again.
The squiggly sort of armor there, is that armor camp?
This right here? Yeah. So with the squares here, the training field, this is,
I think that's cool.
Prospect.
Okay, that's good.
Yes.
Moving down.
The street. Main street. In one of the proposals, yeah, two of the proposals, partially in one. One more. It's because we're currently presenting, we have to stop. Other questions?
Yes, we see the right around, right?
Yes.
And then what we can do is bring in so we can like actually
run on
that. Yeah, so we have a working map so we do we want to start taking notes on it and creating mark it up. Yeah.
Next, as long as I just take the advice myself, as well as the
that's
on our
If we just have a little bit left before we can delve into the rest. Beautiful maps. And all those other maps, like the ones that we had at the coffee hour, the ones that I showed in other meetings, Nikki's made all of those. Not me, I dropped my GIS class. It's too hard. So at the last meeting, we talked about planning to take a walk today, which we will not do because it's way too hot. But we talked about taking a walk so we could walk around the boundaries up that are described here, like in all these different ways. Red one, blue, we can look at whatever boundaries, but to have like the lived walking experience and sense of place, which is important immediately. We're going to do public comment at the end. Yes, public comment, just since a couple other people have joined the meeting, public comment is going to be taken at the end of the presentation. Thank you. We have to do that, and I think it'll be really productive and helpful for just like touch of reality. Not doing it today because of a heat emergency. We only have to advertise 48 hours in advance, so we could pick a day after a heat emergency to just walk in for walking tour of the boundaries, and that would be open to the public as well, so anyone can attend. So there's that. So if I'm sure there's a lot of vacation schedules we have to navigate around, but I think I'll send a doodle poll to everybody in the next week just for a couple of options. We'll check the weather and I'll try to not pick a crazy time. We'll break into like two groups to see different times, or is that
going
to
be onerous for staff?
Maybe we have like two, yeah, maybe it's like we facilitate two different day option for some people. Yeah, that's a great idea. I love that. Cool, yeah. Oh yeah, we could like subcommittee it. We could have one group look at just the staff research proposal. We could have another group look at just the national register. Someone look at just the original. Like there's a lot of options. We can 100% do subcommittees if we needed to. So excellent.
Yeah, I love that.
So does that sound good for everyone? Everyone's still down for the walking tour. We'll make sure the rest of the group has it. I guess if there's like immediate, like, oh, definitely after 5 o'clock or something, fine. Definitely in the middle of the day, definitely 8 a.m., whatever. I don't think it's a crazy idea. We have other things. Sometimes we have other meetings at 8 a.m. It's not like outrageous.
Number of blocks around planned Charles. Mm-hmm. But the ones that were best attended were on the weekend and in the morning around 10 a.m. And
that's great.
Before it gets too hot, people can have their water and their hat, and they did like I think two or three weekend walks, and they did one evening. With the serum in the bill for the day. And I would say we have to give a lot. I understand the city notice rules, but they make me crazy. 48 hours is not enough time for people to juggle stuff. So if we schedule these, I would schedule it with a rain date, like right on.
Rain date is a great idea. Yeah.
Or an emergency date. And so that people will see it and be like, okay, if we check back and now on Instagram it says like it's not happening today. The second date is on the poster.
I love it.
So that way, there's just less confusion.
Yeah. And to be clear, I wouldn't post it only 2 days in advance. I would post it as soon as we figure it a day, but just so it's clear for everyone.
And I understand the rules of they are, but it makes me crazy. There are city departments that give like 8 hours notice on like a Friday or Thursday or Monday.
Totally.
That's happened to me. And it's
I will not be doing that.
So I just think like if you want to attend, you have to give people like the space to attend. And I think 8 can be a little.
Yeah.
Before it gets too hot.
Yeah. We're all scared because we live in Roswell. So. No, it's obviously what works best for the group. And when you were talking, I had the idea, because we obviously want the committee to do this, and we want to hear also what the public thinks. So I think there's a, it might make sense to, you know, at first prioritize doing like committee walkthrough, and we can do subsequent ones. This is our third meeting. Next meeting will be our fourth. And we had agreed actually in our first meeting on the work plan that after our fourth meeting, we'd try to facilitate our first like public engagement event. Maybe that's a public engagement event, walking, and then like coffee or something. I don't know. But maybe that's part of what our plan can be for upcoming public engagement after our fourth meeting, which is very soon. I mean, and also just generally making sure people can attend, of course.
I want another comment for the page on the BPDA. Mm-hmm. It feel a little once you use to like post the walking path.
Yes.
But late enough that they can join in.
They can try to figure it out. That's a great idea.
Like, you know, at 9 a.m. we'll start here, at 10 a.m. we'll be here.
Probably, yeah.
So 9 a.m. here, 10 a.m. here, so that someone misses the 9 a.m.
Excellent. And they were saying they didn't do that when they did Plain Charleston?
I think he was kind of informally doing it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I just, because I love to like copy and paste the template if someone has already done it. But I'll, no worries. But that sounds great. I love that idea. I love the rain date idea. I love having like the timestamps on specific locations. It also like includes time for making sure you're actually discussing things too. Okay. So I think we're all down for planning walk. Make sure you wear good shoes. This is on Amazon. I think it was like $12. Really good. Okay, great. So we have our little walk for the rest of our conversation. We kind of brought this up a little bit just as foreshadowing, but we are going to have to crack into standards and criteria, which we've talked about. That is something staff will develop. And these are going to be the guidelines for the district. We will develop these obviously based off of what the committee thinks will work, what will not work. A lot of examples and homework for you, but just to kind of crack into the general concept of the framework to think in for standards and criteria, we want to think about what the district will regulate, and we want to think about what the district will not regulate either. So just a couple of, I'm more like not standing here, guys, but a couple of things to think about regarding guidelines that we had talked about before, kind of generally, in what standards and criteria do change perspective of planning. So it's something that you might look at right now and say, oh, that's not right, but in 10, 15 years, when someone else wants another house, we'll make sure they do it right the second time. All the district guidelines are different. They're all different. We have Self-Ed right next to St. Paul, and those are two different guidelines. Beacon Hill and Back Bay, two different guidelines. You can't apply Back Bay in Highland Park, and you can't apply Fort Point in Beacon Hill. So this will be specifically for the needs of Charleston and for the monuments for a landmark district. These will not be for anything else. And as a note, based off of the Secretary of Interior standards for preservation, or for rehabilitation, so many different jargon words, but standards for preservation, and it's mostly making sensible changes. It's really making sure that materials are, you know, make sense. These are designed to protect the character defining features of the neighborhood. So for example, the South End, which is a little example here, famous for having a top, middle, and bottom in their brick house buildings, and that's a character defining feature we talk about. So when someone comes to the South End and they want to build a new building, you tell them you better make sure it has a top, middle, and bottom. It can be updated and adjusted over time, really whenever it needs to be. It's a process of coming to agreement and formalizing it, but can be updated and changed as needed. They do not prohibit new construction. It informs new construction. So it just is really going to help make sure that something gets built. It'll be compliant with our guidelines and make sure, for example, that you aren't going to be using vinyl for your window trim replacement. You're going to use wood. That's an example from the South End. Could be the complete opposite in Charleston, just like it is in Highland Park. And elements like life safety equipment, like fire escapes, those are reviewed for appropriateness, but we do expedite those reviews because we need to live. We don't want anyone to die in a historic house. more on the jurisdiction of the Landmarks Commission and what we do and don't do. So a couple things, like I said, we don't own, we talked about this before in a couple of our other meetings, we don't own any other designated properties, like the Office of Historic Preservation, we do not own anything. We cannot make your building be changed or fixed or be changed or fixed like unnecessarily. We don't demolish buildings. We don't regulate the use. Sorry, if you want it to be an apartment or condos are not an apartment, we can't regulate that. We also don't regulate the interior for most cases. There are a couple small exceptions here and there. We don't prevent new construction, and we will not regulate or comment on public art. Really, in instances where that does come up is more like installation methods. Like, oh, if you paint brick, we might have a little something to say about that. But we're not going to say, don't use that color, use this one. We don't like that flower, use this one instead. That's not going to happen. What we do is administer design review. So when you go to get a building permit and you need that to get that to go change your windows, it will flag our review. And we will review that work so long as it's under our jurisdiction to make sure it's compliant with the standards and criteria we all come up with here. And these are kind of synonymously referred to as guidelines, but they're not a guide, they're the law. It will obviously prevent the loss of historic fabric and designs. And we do regulate demolition in really every capacity. In theory, when we have a district in Charlestown, right now we're all subject to Article 85, which you probably know and have dealt with in some way, which is the demolition delay ordinance. But if there is a district, you would have to submit an application to the commission. The commission would review that. It's a different process than the ordinance. So. Some things we do, some things we don't do, some misconceptions. Things that are routinely exempt in a lot of our landmarks, holiday decorations, window AC units. Paint on wood is actually exempt, and sometimes like entirely people don't realize it, but they can paint their door hot pink. Rear elevations, we don't regulate in the South End, but there's a couple different, we're gonna really crack into it. This is gonna be the, I think, kind of like the most fun part of the working group, in my opinion. Rear elevations in the South End are not reviewed, but they are reviewed in Back Bay. Are you going to want to review private ways? Do you want to review rear facade or rear elevations? Items are visible from a public street, temporary signage, standard maintenance, temporary potted plants. These are all things that are routinely exempt. Also showed you this slide before, but I thought it would be helpful. Just a little brief sort of summary of what the different guidelines and districts are like. And you can see they really range in strictness. Our newest ones would be Highland Park, Aberdeen, and Fort Point. And when I say these ones are newer, that's like 2009. So this is 2022, Highland Park. Yeah, give everyone a minute. Oh, they don't talk about demolition, new construction, landscaping, trees, gardens, and rock formations. So we definitely review the demolition there and new construction, but they don't really get into a lot of the same details that you might in South End or Beacon Hill. There's a lot more specifics on materiality in some other districts. And think like Highland Park, Jen has and we'll probably endlessly talk about Highland Park forever, but it was a very specific decision to make the guidelines the way they are so that they are a little bit more lax, they are a little bit more loose, but they're regulating the things that they really want to regulate. But then at the same time, some things fall through the cracks because it's a little too vague sometimes. So they might review new construction, but they might not really have as much teeth to say other certain things like window configuration or materiality. So you have to really think about what's a priority, what do you want to regulate, and also vice versa, what you do not want to regulate, because those will both inform each other. Yes. So our homework assignment for you all is to review some standards and criteria, which sounds like it might be kind of boring, but it's actually really interesting because you guys are all interested because you signed up for the study committee. I know you know your Highland Park ones, yeah. But and actually Fadi, one of our other study committee members, is on Highland Park, so he can also speak to that too if he wanted, if he felt the need to. But so we wanted you guys, I'll send these to you also, you have them also, but they're on our website. We want you to take a look at the Highland Park guidelines, the Aberdeen guidelines, and the Beacon Hill guidelines. I think that will give a very wide range idea of what some groups do and what some groups don't do. Highland Park, you're going to have the most slack. Beacon Hill is going to be the more strict, and Aberdeen is really going to be in between. I really feel like Aberdeen Highland Park vibes from this group, but that's just a thing.
I wish I could. Can you move that?
Oh, yeah, you can. All right, there you go.
Sorry.
Hold on, just hold on. It'll go away.
So, just so I understand, you're saying that you have purview over demolitions, new construction, landscaping, gardens, and lock modifications for any area within the district.
In my yeah, so like an example, there's like buildings, what do we have? There's going to be some new buildings on the same site. And you know, like rock formations. Rocksbury pudding stone, we all know about. There might be large outcroppings, and someone might want to dig this out, remove it, and you know, get rid of them because you're building something. That commission specifically wants to preserve those outcroppings as they should. And so they, in their guidelines, actually encourage the, aside from encouraging the retention, encouraging the reuse. So we've had some developers come in and, you know, say, we have to remove this outcropping, but we're actually going to put it back on site. It's like a public bench. So cute. Like, I love, like, that's the sort of thing we can, that a commission can do. And I think that's something I can see this group being
interested in. So, as just a question as far as our boundaries, if we were to push our boundaries up through this, saying that that whole area where rail fence is, and pretty much the housing development, would that mean that there could be no demolition?
So, I mean, it's something that would have to be submitted as an application to the commission, whenever it exists in this form. And basically, the commission will see that proposal. Mind you, we're never going to look at a demolition without a plan for what you're going to put there after as well. We are not in the business of creating parking lots. So there's that. I mean, they would have an application be proposed and reviewed, and the commission would come up with a decision.
Based on what this group is
about,
right?
And also, it's something, honestly, we're still dealing with in Highland Park, is that, like, work that's been permitted before the creation of the district still can occur. That doesn't now need to be reviewed by the commission. It's sort of legacy to end. But any new permits, I mean, more info.
Really? Because the project that I'm working on has been covered by professional real estate developer at an officer previously permitted. And so that's so bad.
I think it didn't it change?
Like, not material. Like 5 feet.
We count that as a change. Yeah, if that counts as a new project.
I just want to put out there, though, I was actually going to say for the example of the Highland Park, just because of how much I know about the Highland Park one. If you go back to the list of what they are, I kind of feel like the ones that we're dealing with here have a little bit more in common with the South End and the Beacon Hill.
In terms of what exists, yes.
Yeah, I think because of that, like, I feel like those rules kind of better inform what we do here, because the Highland Park one, you know, no offense to anyone listening and who is involved in building it, but it's so large.
Yeah.
And it's such diverse typology.
I agree. Yeah.
And it's very uncommon, like, what we're talking about here is so cool. It's much more like.
So like I was saying, like the Highland Park ones, like there are gaps in those guidelines. And so that's why I want you all to look at these so you can see.
I guess that's not really relevant to the physical form foundation of the foundation.
Well, yeah, it's the approach, right? It's not.
one way of thinking about that is that if you're in Highland Park and you own an Italianate house with a bunch of beautiful brackets, you can remove all of those brackets, which are a character defining feature in Highland Park, and have them exempt. In Beacon Hill, you would not be able to do that. That would be completely restricted.
Yeah, I mean, all I really meant is that I could see Charlestown wanting a little bit of flexibility. It's kind of very different from Highland Park. As the person who was the planner for multiple years, trust me.
I think what Gavin's also trying to say is, like, given the range, this is Highland Park is the least, right? But they're also learning now. Projects are happening, yeah. And people call.
Yeah.
Where you change the paint color on anything on the street, and you have to have an application. Yeah.
And you're reviewing, like, intercoms.
Intercoms, paint color changes. You want to remove, like, a row of bricks from your sidewalk. Anything you can see from the street is regulated under our purview. Yeah.
Yeah, where things like that are not.
Yeah.
I forgot to give you a shout out. Sorry, Chris. Yeah, just to see.
So this is, I mean, this is, you know, just talk about what standards and guidelines are in the community, how that affects and impacts it. Coming from a commission side, that I was really used to them. And then I really didn't.
Kind of describing the protection area, like in the south end. So in the south end, we have those guidelines, but past Harrison, Albany, I forget which one, Albany, there's a protection area. So we don't regulate, like, you know, people changing their windows, but we'll regulate height of buildings. We'll regulate views into the district for massing, landscaping, much, much more simpler review that, I mean, really helps with perception of the entryway into the neighborhood. I also, Linda, just want to say I really like the way that you described the standards and criteria of, like, the approach to urbanism. I felt like that was a really good way to put it. Yeah. It is. I mean, it's the approach. Mm-hmm. In the 80s. Yeah. All these people, I have no idea. Yeah, I mean, they did it all at once, which I think probably helps.
Mm-hmm.
industrial, definitely, because actually, sort of what you're saying, kind of differently though, or Kirsten was saying, is that in the South End guidelines, so this is also a good example, is that there are some parts where there are a couple, it's pretty consistent, but then you get to the end and they're like, actually, you have a couple of different things if you're a commercial storefront versus if you're like zoned residential. So there's a couple little things like that. There's other, Fort Point has written into there actually a couple of buildings that they were like, when the time comes, someone wants to demolish this, actually it'll be fine and you don't need commission review because we've already decided, like it'll already be fine. So it's very build, you know, choose your own adventure, build what works for you guys. But also that's what we're here to help do, is make sure that what you're doing is effective. Linda. Yeah. I mean, they'll say like, basically it says like, oh, this building is non, we're already telling you this is a non-contributing building, but it's within the district because, for example, you have a non-contributing, it's in the district, it comes down, but what you build there is going to be in the district and that will be regulated by us. So there's that layer.
Development that actually like facilitates a faster process to get it to look more
exactly like you deal with it for a while.
Yeah, and we drove around a little bit. It's quite obvious. Very Charlestown, and they like that 1950s. Except they just came in with their 1950s sweater and put it in. So you know it would be in the boundaries.
But it would be nice to encourage someone to change that.
Yeah. Are they thinking? I mean, we don't say anything's non-contributing.
No, because then that would set up for a legal precedent to say, you mentioned that this looks like this. Why do we have to adhere to these guidelines? So the idea would be that it would be in like the buildings that do not have character-defining features that define the rest of the neighborhood. The idea would be that we could incrementally change those back. The other thing that's really important to point out, especially in historics like this, districts or proposed historic districts like this, is that when there's time for new construction, we do not want to make fake historic buildings. It never works. It will never work. We don't build the same way. But what we do want to do is we want to create new construction that will be sensitive to the historic environment around it. And there's a couple really great examples. Gabby worked on 566 Columbus in the South End. There's a property on Farnsworth and Four Point Channel. Clearly new buildings, but they're complementary to their historic surroundings. So.
And what we can do is we can photographs.
Okay.
Yeah. And, as we go along, we start, really looking at what would be in that form.
Especially
I feel like to your point earlier, that's important to know about that. And especially, I'd love to know more about the protection area system. Some examples on if this building is considered protection area, what does that mean?
Be mindful that a protection area has to surround a landmark or a landmark district. It can't just be a freestanding component.
Okay.
So if you wanted there to be.
Monument Square, then it would be that landmark.
Yeah, so if you did Monument Square as a full landmark district, in theory, you could do a protection area for, the five blocks around it.
Perhaps.
I don't know about that.
Yeah,
but
that would be a little bit. But I think that's a good point. Because take with the Monument Square protection area. But again, you're not going to be having much regulation about what happens.
Right. It's massing, demolition, landscaping, topography. Demolition, massing, and height. It's like massing slash height. They kind of took both, and topography are the biggest ones. Yes.
very good.
Yep.
There's a lot of times we have like projects in the protection area in the south end where it might be this huge thing, but there's an approved amount of height that they already have. So if it's, it meets, let's say it's like 70 feet and they're proposing like the craziest building you've ever seen, but it's only like 2 feet taller than that limit, we only regulate that 2 feet.
Not the design.
Not the design, not anything else. We regulate the height of that 2 feet. So it's
also be mindful, we're all talking about the private realm. Historic districts also regulate the public realm, including what the city does to the sidewalks, to the streetscape, to street furniture, and the parks. Protection areas do not really protect any of them. So be mindful that not only is this a restriction on private property, but also public property as well. So there's been a lot of conversations in the neighborhood about streetlights in the neighborhood, right? That is potentially something that we could regulate. The same thing, and I'm sure you've heard this about the, this isn't a thing anymore, but newspaper boxes. There's a big lawsuit on Beacon Hill because the Boston Globe was putting them everywhere. We regulate those now. So you can't just put them anywhere. So things to keep in mind, it's not just the private realm, it's the public realm that also that we can regulate.
One of the things that's coming up in the districts that we're looking at is EV
charging. Yep. We have some really great examples on Beacon Hill. You think that they would be banned. They're not. If you go over to Lewisburg Square and you look at those old, they kind of look like coal chute covers. They're not. They're EV chargers. You pop them up and there's a cord that pops out. They're cast iron and they look exactly like a coal chute. So
that's, I mean, but the point is like regulated.
Yep.
So that had to be creative to make it fit in the neighborhood instead of just
that. Yeah, if you've seen the 3G or the 5G towers in New York City that they're assembling all over the streets, they're pretty intrusive. It's probably only a matter of time before they're here. So
we're gonna have 30 minutes left, so we'll just make sure utilize those. So is there anyone else have anything else they want to add for standards and criteria for meet and TIA?
So after you are more in the next meeting, we're gonna like actually start to dig into like what people want to see or not.
Yeah, well, our next meeting is also about standards and criteria. We have it in more than one meeting because it's big. It's a big, it's like the most important thing. Yeah, this is to help get the green juices flowing. Linda.
Yeah.
That's why I'm going to send out the poll. We'll try to make sure, because you know, we don't want it to be too much of a domino.
And then we'll be going to walk, and you're going to start. And then also,
you can regulate it. You can regulate the part of it. I missed the first part of your sentence. I'm sorry.
I want to revisit the public comment.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you should say getting that back in more delicate too far.
Yes.
Yeah.
Every meeting.
Right.
Totally. That's part of sort of in the beginning of talking about our public engagement and making sure people are informed. And like, so that's part of what we have been trying to put flyering and listserv and the ONS emails. We do a lot of leading horses to water. I do, it's like my whole job. So I will lead you to the water. But yes.
Like walk the
walks. They'll be public in more than one for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I guess as far as like a timeline, we do some walking and in the meantime get a big map into it. And then at our next meeting, we could look more and start to work with the map and then also start to take time with the students and criteria. I think, you know, public comment is super important to have all the way through. deep thinking about it. So to also go out to the wedding and give them an idea of like why you're thinking about this.
All of our meetings also all start with reviewing public feedback. So, I mean, if there's anything we hear between the last time we've seen you and then the current meeting, we'll have it there. And, like, we want the same, even if you've heard, like, I hate those people. I want to hear it, for better or for worse.
No, we'll do a lot to some there. We'll do a lot with just this group, and then we'll do a lot with...
We'll have like multiple for sure, but off the bat, we'll just first do the committee, and obviously it's public, so anyone can join, and we'll advertise it for usual. But the priority at first is the committee. You guys are making the decisions.
So the thing will be in place that public comments are staying until the end. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's great. Right. We're going to keep things orderly.
I just had a question. I've been during the like almost 3 years.
Yep.
For Southland and Beacon Hill in particular, I guess, a lot of their psychology is that like stairway up the entryway, which I know has conflict with like the
ADA
accessibility. Could you maybe give us a little bit of a primer on like how that works? Obviously with the cleanliness of Charlestown, that's also a big factor in our psychology.
I'm a planner for Beacon Hill, if you don't know. We do everything that we possibly can to accommodate folks with mobility issues. It's a misconception that we will not allow adaptation of historic resources for mobility issues. So,
but I actually have comment the other way, which is to say, like, how the much can we preserve the those stairways?
And sometimes it's a discussion of
case by case.
Like South End, right? You've got lots of rental units, and based on the community, you have five accessibility. So sometimes you can ask for a variance sort of district. So it's not the same exact entrance, but it's a different, more accessible entrance. The accessible unit is on the floor. I mean, you don't have to put a huge elevator, and
people are getting those during. It doesn't happen. Yeah, I feel like we don't get those requests as often as I think we think. But whenever we do, we always write letters supporting them. We always are like, yes, you know, whatever. We do everything we can.
There are always creative solutions to these problems as a way of keeping the historic integrity while allowing slight modifications to accommodate these. And just a quick example of that is the Beacon Hill Bookstore. They needed an ADA accessible entrance. There's a service entrance that had some stairs that were historic. We allowed them to cover the stairs, but the stairs remain under the ramp so that the wheelchairs can have access to the property by going down that ramp. But if that was ever converted back to a private residence, that could be removed and the stairs are underneath. So creative solutions. We always want to give it the old college try. But there are many ways we can protect the historic integrity of buildings while leveraging accessibility.
I'm thinking really,
really. Yep. And we have some talent here. I mean, Harvard's architecture school is right down the street, right? Cambridge 7. So there's lots out there for creative solutions.
Anything else for standards and criteria? Thoughts? Okay. Next, we have our before we get into what we're doing at the next steps. So we'll just go into our public comment period. Any comments from members of the public in attendance? We could go virtual first. Oh, whoa, sorry.
Hi, you just unmuted me. Can I talk?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you.
Great. I cannot hear anything, and neither can my neighbors who took the time to listen to this Zoom. It's impossible to hear anybody but Gabriella. So that's really not only frustrating, but another example of this not being very community friendly. I would also just like to mention that this is the third meeting, not the fourth. If you could please provide in an email following this email the dates of the actual meetings. You referred to it as the fourth meeting, it's the third. When you talk about the next walk being a meeting, but it'll, let me please, I've just listened to noise for an hour and a half. I just finished, just noise, like that I can't understand because there's, it's just noise. I can only understand Gabriella, and my neighbors are having the same experience. So if you're having a walk that is for committee members only, you said it's a public meeting, so public can come, but we're gonna do the first one with just the committee, that should not be considered one of your public meetings. So please be clear about that. If it's a public meeting, it's not just for the committee members. If it's just for the committee members, it's not a public meeting. Just, I think that's, that seems like a simple ask. When Nick was talking about the extended boundaries, he referenced Monument Street, which I was so happy to hear because Monument Street is one of the oldest streets in Charlestown, much older than Monument Avenue, as I'm sure our representatives from the Historic and Preservation Societies are well aware of. Is that the case, Monument Street? And will it go all the way to Medford? And if not, why not? Last time we all met, you talked about the unifying element being the Revolutionary War, and that we needed to create a story, a narrative around the reasons for this extension that fit in with the Rev War criteria. Is that still happening? I mean, is the Revolutionary War the unifying element or even one of the elements that you're using to dictate the boundaries of this extended district? If it is, you cannot exclude the Bunker Hill housing development, the public spaces between those buildings. I have a question for Julie Hall. Julie, do you consider the parcel of land between Decatur and Polk Street that abuts the burial ground to have been a place, a battle site during the Revolutionary War? Do you recognize that land, that place, as having been a significant part of the battlefield? It's a yes or no.
Joanna, I'm going to jump in because it was on my slide. This is a little dry.
Oh, I can't hear you. So, I mean, I'm sorry. I can't even hear you unless you sit closer. The only person I can hear is Gabriella. So I'm going to just leave it there. I'd love an answer. Maybe you guys can email me.
Okay.
Thanks.
Can you hear me now?
Now I can. Yeah.
Okay, great. So, yep. Okay. So if you take a look at our slides, the formation of this district is not focused on the Revolutionary War. That is not the context. The context is the development of the area around the Bunker Hill Monument. And if you take a look at our proposed boundaries and the research that we did, we are looking at planned development around the monument. Now, last time we did say we would be looking at it in a systematic way and based on community feedback. So if you can see the slide I've got up, that is what we did here. So we did also look at what was, a Breeds Hill district, not related to what happened at Breeds Hill, but as boundaries. And then additionally, our methodology goes into, you know, the study report goes back to architectural styles and construction dates. So we are looking at built structures between 1839 and 1912 and planned development. As you can see, these, what is highlighted in the different colors, These are on maps. We can see we have the historical information to show where planned development was happening around the neighborhood. So we are looking at expanding the boundaries to tell the story of the planned development and other development around the Bunker Hill Monument. Now,
so will the Bunker Hill Monument be included in this district?
No.
Oh,
it can be included in that.
Need you to repeat that. The Bunker Hill Monument will not be included.
We're going to move on. Okay.
I just would like a clear answer on that. The Bunker Hill
Monument is in the area, correct?
Is it included in the district? You've got to be kidding me. This is hysterical.
You know what, Janet, we've already discussed this and the legality of listing it as a local landmark, okay? And we've already talked about that. So we're going to move on unless you have any other comments. Okay.
Great. I don't think anyone else on the Zoom had their hand raised. I don't know if it's anything you want to put on the spot. Sure. Can you so there is not a protection area right now. That's like a concept we were discussing. So onto the slide that's better for what you're talking about. Sorry.
Can you go all the way back to the original?
Yeah.
Yeah. So these are the original.
Original proposed.
What was proposed? Originally, what was proposed, right? And we learned last time from the historic preservation how they drew those boundaries was because of the owners collectively wanting it.
And this whole people is expanding on.
So they had said, let's make a district. Here's the context. And this is what the petition that was accepted by the Boston Landmarks Commission. This was the original proposal.
If a new expanded proposal, how many homes are in that? If you know the architectural history, how many of those homes? How many homes?
Just like the number of properties you have. Oh, I don't know. Did you find it?
But I mean, so.
Sure.
Because we're talking about those kind of people around meetings. Why are you going to yell at people who are going to get property that is going to be impacted by this?
About before with the coffee hours. Mm-hmm. What we had showed you before was highlighted. Like, when I came to coffee hours,
we would love
this. If
this becomes okay, you should highlight and notify.
That is, they will. Totally. That is all like 100% part of this.
And they can come to the meetings, and I'm like, they've never received a letter, they're not on social media, they never received a notice. And also, when you send out a flyer, you should explain to them. This will restrict what you can do with your pool. And you guys say it in a nice way, but in reality, if they're going to do something, this is an added layer. Like, I have the house in Charlestown, we have the zoning board of appeals. They made sure we can walk with the neighborhood. They did everything this is doing. So this is just an added layer. So I think that in fairness, you should inform.
Of course.
One last simple question. If you said publicly, lanes are regulated or sidewalks
We still have a ways to go, but part of the process is having a lot of community outreach along the way, which we're just getting started to plan. And then when the draft report is done, after taking into account all that public feedback, it's also posted online for 60 days and we collect even more public feedback. And then there's a public hearing. So there's like a lot of steps for people to like weigh in. We're just not there yet, but we will get there. But I want to say I appreciate your point about it being a physical mailer. Like, I do think, I think we did that for Highland Park, but yeah.
But what I said is part of the engagement that the CNC wanted was to give people an opportunity who may not otherwise, they're not going to get online and work at it. You know what I mean? And to try to have
it. Right, yeah, don't forget that idea.
This is like very, this is just, we're seeing it sometimes too. So it's not like we're trying to get a large space on this yet.
Also, it's like, there's no way that like you would know this because you've experienced this is so early that that's in the process.
Like when you say early,
we start at 1 April.
Highland Park is about 18 months. We're just talking about that. So we should also say that once it goes to the Boston Landmarks Commission to vote, and they take into account public feedback, and it's like they hear a lot of opposition, they're not going to vote to approve it. But if they vote to approve it, it goes to the mayor. The mayor has to approve it, and then it goes to city council, and they have to approve it too. So there are like other avenues for people to like, if it passes the BLC and people are not happy, they can go to their city councilor and say like, you need to veto this. Which is why we've tried to tell the study committee like it's important to pick an area that people support, because if there's too much opposition, it won't pass. Yeah.
And back to what the original boundaries were.
Yeah.
Those residents were spoken to, and they were all, yes, let's do it.
Right.
Right.
We haven't canvassed this area yet, but we will.
This is a, maybe I'm right, I'll be responsive to that a little bit.
like I said, I work in development in Roxbury only, not in Charlestown. Never. And sometimes I get public criticism for that. I don't work in Charlestown. I'm very, and I also am an owner in Charlestown, so I'm very sympathetic to that point of view. So I also just want to convey that, like, not everyone on the committee is universally like, we must preserve every detail. Like, there's sympathetic ideas here to, like, you know, I'll be really interested in the next couple meetings when we talk about the standards of, like, are there ways that we can make some kinds of development easier, right? By, like, pinpointing, like, this is not covered. So, about later is, like, I think people should have a rooftop. Like, can those carve-outs happening explicitly might actually make someone's development and ZBA process easier in the future, too. So, like, maybe there could be that.
And not just development, but, like, what's happening in the past. So, if you have a house that was built in 1960, that is doesn't count.
Look at that and say, right? Well, you said there's no exclusions.
It's not my inherent.
Not inherent.
I mean,
if it gets demolished and rebuilt,
it would come back to this first.
But
again, not, you're not trying to build what you're
trying
to
do. But what if there's nothing there? The person buys it, it's that becomes an issue too, right? Because now they have. If they want to remodel, then they're
going to be possibly this part of the VLC having existed for 50 years is that the bonds are all of these things where people say, I just bought a house. No one told me this is in the South End, and I'm told you need to be told. But like, but then also it's like that's everyone. That's every person's situation. I mean, you need to go get a permit, you're going to get hurt, like,
yeah.
Your reviews fly.
A lot of friends be already.
Yeah, and some of the reports that come by the design of the Lake District, which you were speaking to earlier, would go away.
The thing when you're always walking.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought this was an addition. No? It kind of takes over the place. It's still permitting and zoning.
But it won't be an extra step while you're consolidating. You can step on.
Okay.
Do you
have one for this? If a group in the community, I think I did ask this before, if a group in any area said, we don't want this.
Yes, I remember.
What do they do?
This is what we talk about. Remember at the CNC meeting, I think like you have to that there, and you can actually submit a petition to withdraw.
But that's only after it was, if
after
it's designated, you can rescind the designation
after
by petition.
But not on the
if you don't want it now during this process. It's basically telling the study committee, telling the commissioners, telling your city council members.
Yeah, otherwise, once it's designated, then you'd have to have a petition filed.
Yeah.
To rescind.
Right.
The designation.
That would take 10 registered voters. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a boundary. Say, for instance, the entire street, the designation,
mm-hmm.
if the entire street writes it into the study committee, there's a potential that could be removed from
mm-hmm.
the group.
So you say there's a private way up the street from here that they just included.
If we heard from Anderson person who lived in our region, not want this, I don't think you
yeah.
all have any interest in including it, probably.
Right.
So,
yeah.
I'm happy to have any time to talk more about your questions.
I think we should have
that. We want to see what's happening next. Okay, so we did okay, next steps. A couple things. One, I forgot to write on this agenda a vote for chair and vice chair. So we can talk about nominations for chair and vice chair right now. And at the next meeting, we can vote. I'll say I've only had one person self-nominate for chair, Nancy Johnson.
Yay.
If anyone else sit in chair or vice chair, speak now, email me later, call me, whatever. But that's what I would nominate. Okay, great. Well,
are you saying you want to be vice
chair? No. Vice chair. That's okay. But yeah, so stew on that. And if you're interested, just let me know. And I'll reiterate this to the other committee members who aren't here today as well. We will discuss more public feedback, our usual, more in-depth conversations about standards and criteria pending your homework assignments. And like I was mentioning earlier at the beginning of the meeting, we had agreed in our work plan that after the fourth meeting, we would plan a public engagement event. So the next meeting will be our fourth, so we can talk about that a little bit more. We might want to see, open to any ideas. I know we're talking a little about some like open house or a coffee hour type thing, but anything you guys think of, just let us know. And we'll have to set our next meeting date soon as well. And I think there's a couple options I put over here because that's my availability. 7:30 might be a little too soon.
Yeah.
8:20 or I mean we could always find another day in between if we needed to. These are just some of the Wednesdays and stuff is what we did. Kind of good bond for the little the walk would be this is how
okay.
That is for like our fourth set down meeting.
But what
is
all my feet though? Yeah, so it should be late August then if we have your walk before.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Great. Okay. So we can pencil in August 20th.
Yeah.
August 20th for anyone listening, August 20th is penciled in.
Yep.
Penciled in, not official, penciled in. And we will try to plan our walking before that. So you guys are beautiful. And my offer always stands that I can call you again if you want to talk about anything one-on-one or any questions or something we did. Can we just ask in front of other people?
Any questions about students?
Any questions about their place? Yeah. So, we'll see that. That's the end of our meeting.
Okay.
So, do we adjourn?
Motion
to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second. Okay. Oh, everyone's ready. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.